Ladies and gentlemen, sports fans alike, welcome to another edition of Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago, one of the couple, two, three best podcasts around. So sit back, grab yourself a cold one and a Polish sausage, park your keister in the French room, and listen to Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago.
In Chicago, you know that all sports rock. The Bears, Hawks, Bulls, Cubs, and Sox. Pick your favorite, you can choose, as long as the Packers lose. For everything you need to know, it's Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago. Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago.
Hey everybody, welcome to another edition of Bill Swirsky Sports Talk Chicago. This is your hosts, Alex and Sean. On this episode, we are going to be talking about being on the eve of the NFL season starting, Cubs' impossible winning streak, and the White Sox dealing with a lot of injury concerns. But first, I'd like to thank our sponsor, the Rockford Ice Hogs. If you're not familiar with the Rockford Ice Hogs, they're the AHL minor league affiliate of the Chicago Blackhawks. What does that mean for you? You get to see the stars of tomorrow today at family-friendly, affordable prices. Sure, season's not currently going on, but we are only weeks away. So make sure you head on over to icehogs.com, get a hat, shirt, jersey, sign up for season tickets and more. Tell them Swirsky Sports sent you. Alex, are you ready? We just had the last weekend without NFL football for a long time.
You know, despite the up and down feelings I have for the Bears season, I am just ready for another year of football. No matter how good or bad the Bears are, I am ready for it. And, you know, it kind of, I don't want to say it crept up on us because obviously we've been covering preseason and everything, but it just, the way this summer went by so fast, it felt like we were just talking about the draft. And now all of a sudden it's season time. It's time to go. We're getting ready for this thing.
Yeah, absolutely. You're right. It hasn't crept up because it's seemed like it's been a long time. But on the other hand, you know, I guess with COVID and everything, it really has seemed like a bit of a short period too. It seems like we just had the draft and then training camp, and then suddenly everything just started rolling. And I guess being excited for the season sort of does that. I mean, I guess I'm not so much excited about the season per se because I don't think it's going to be that great. But I feel like Justin Fields makes it exciting.
Yeah, and I mean, you can say that about this season and really beyond, because at least you're going into the season thinking, you know, even if you're not good this year, at least you have some reason of hope for the future. I mean, just think about how different it would be if we were sitting here right now and the only quarterbacks we had were Andy Dalton and Nick Foles, and maybe you drafted some guy in the later rounds that was just really more of a project. But having Justin Fields, I think just it changes the attitudes of Bears fans, because I think we were heading for an all-time level of apathy this year had they not drafted Justin Fields. Pace and Nagy could have really gotten lucky here, because the amount of people I saw who were like, you know what, I don't give a crap about this Bears team anymore. After the Andy Dalton stuff, after the fiasco of the postseason presser before the draft, you know, I thought the Bears fan base really was in trouble. And I think there were people that were ready to just get off. But at least Justin Fields has people hanging on for the time being, even though, like you said, expectations for the Bears, as I agree, they are not overly high. And I'm sure we'll talk about that in detail. But either way, you always get excited for week one.
Yeah, I'm still annoyed that the Bears signed Andy Dalton over Ryan Fitzpatrick. I guess it's a moot point here at this time, but I felt like everybody and their mother knew the Bears were going to have to draft a quarterback after they decided not to re-sign Mitchell Trubisky.
Mm-hmm.
And when they, you know, so signing Andy Dalton, no matter what, was always going to be a stopgap type thing.
Right.
So why muddy the waters? Why not bring in like a Ryan Fitzpatrick, who everybody, including him, knows that he is a stopgap. In fact, he may retire at the end of the season. So, and like, he loves this. He's in this because he loves this. He's proven that he's fine sitting on the bench. He's fine coming in, going back and forth, you know, taking the pressure off of young quarterbacks with his antics. Like, I don't know. I still feel like that was the better option. And he, you know, sure, he's, you never know what you're going to get out of him. Either he's going to be an absolute ace or he's going to be, you know, dog turd tacos. But like, I just like, there was never going to be any controversy. You know, if you would have signed, if you would have drafted a third round or fourth round quarterback versus drafting, you know, Justin Fields, it wasn't going to change anything for Ryan Fitzpatrick. He was going to be the same guy no matter what.
Well, you know, kind of to your point with Ryan Fitzpatrick, I feel like with Andy Dalton, you're just kind of meeting in a nowhere middle of a Ryan Fitzpatrick right now, because the best of Ryan Fitzpatrick is probably better than what Andy Dalton can give you these days. But the dog turd tacos version of Ryan Fitzpatrick, as you so eloquently put it, is probably worse than what Andy Dalton can give you. So I feel like Fitzpatrick could kind of meet right in the middle there. But, you know, also, like you said, it's a moot point. Andy Dalton's the starter. And I said this before, even if he's not good, at least you could say that Justin Fields is behind a guy that has had an overall good career. It makes me feel better. Like, I mean, I'm not saying this means much, but I still feel a hell lot better with a young quarterback behind a former Pro Bowler and 4,000-yard passer in Andy Dalton than when we had Trubisky behind Mike Glennon. All I can pray for is that Andy Dalton, I mean, really, I don't expect Andy Dalton at this point of his career to go out and win the game. You just want him to go out there and manage the game. You don't want him to lose you the game. You don't expect him to do great things, but you know, if he can just manage the game at this point and give you a chance, I think that's really the best you could ask of Andy Dalton at this point of his career. I mean, you know, again, it's not like he's ancient, but he's clearly past his best days. And I'm not really sure a shaky O-line and the offensive play calling of Matt Nagy is going to shake any of that Pro Bowl magic he had years ago out of him. But, you know, at least I could say Andy Dalton is not a dumb quarterback. He's not a guy that's just going to, you know, do stupid things. He's been around. He's had success. I mean, my concern is what he's able to do at this point of his career, combined with the questionable play calling and the offensive scheme and the offensive line. It just, that could be kind of a recipe for disaster.
Well, you know, we're here. We're ready for the season to start in a couple of days. We finally have what's going to be our 53-man roster.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an oddball one. Extremely odd. And I wish I could be a fly on the wall in those meetings with Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace when they made this 53-man roster, because it is, I mean, it, for most of it is what we expected, but there was a quite a few question marks that, you know, left me scratching my head. And it's not about any, it's weird, it's not about any player. It's about the number of players at certain positions.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we've had updates since then. So I guess we could dive through and then, you know, I got a few questions here from people. So I guess we can go through there.
All right.
So the quarterbacks, this was no shock. Dalton, Fields, and Foles, what we all predicted. Running backs, they only kept three on the active roster. So Khalil Herbert, Damian Williams, and David Montgomery. That's it, three. And Tariq Cohen is on the PUP list. And from what CBS is reporting, that he is not expected back until week 7.
Yeah, it's going to be a while for him. And no Ryan Nall on the roster then.
No, he is on the practice squad. So there's three running backs on the roster, which is a little bit of a surprise. Mm-hmm. Figured they would have, I mean, we all knew that Cohen was going to be on the PUP list. Figured right. They would carry a fourth, you know, probably Artavis Pierce or maybe Ryan Nall. But they didn't. So hopefully there's no injuries, because It's going to leave us a little flat. Wide receivers on the initial 53-man roster, there was only five wide receivers.
Yeah, that was one that I think people were scratching their heads the most about.
Yeah. And so it is Bird, Goodwin, Mooney, and Robinson, who we all had as locks. And then Webster, who was a waiver claim from the 49ers, who was brought in to be a special teams returner pretty much exclusively. So that was odd. I expected six, and I expected a few extra guys that, you know, are now on the practice squad, but that it didn't end up making it. The other odd one is the Bears kept five tight ends.
Yeah. So, I mean, they kept JP Holtz on the squad and Jesper Horsted. They kept both of them.
Yes. I just assumed they would keep one. I was, you know, normally teams will carry three tight ends, and I assumed the Bears would have four, but five is an odd one. So they kept Graham, Holtz, Horsted, James, and Komet. So
very odd,
very odd. Makes me wonder, are they going to go heavy sets to protect the quarterback, or are they going to run a lot of two tight end sets? I don't know.
I mean, if it works, okay. I just wasn't expecting it.
They kept nine offensive linemen: Whitehair, Bars, Affetti, Peters, Wilkinson, Mustafa, Barome, Daniels, and Lechavius Simmons. And they did keep Tevin Jenkins on the initial 53-man roster. And I got a question of why, when he's not going to be ready to play for a while. And the answer is, based on the NFL rules, had they not put him on the initial 53-man roster and put him on the injured list, he would not have been eligible to play at all this season.
Yeah, and that's an important note, because you hope that he can play at some point this season. And Bears brass is clearly hopeful that they want to get him in there before season's end. So you want to keep that window open. And that doesn't mean he's going to, but it means he's eligible to. So who knows if we actually will see him this season. But yeah, you answered it perfectly as to the reason why. And I honestly didn't know that until I read about it like a week ago or so ago.
Yeah, so essentially, if they hadn't, you know, put him on that roster, there was no shot he could play. It would be against the rules. So this is at least, I mean, I'm not saying he will play this season, but if he's able to, he'll be allowed to. But CBS again is estimating his return at week 9.
Really?
Yes. I don't know what they're basing this on, but they're estimating week 9, which
it almost seems a little generous, but who knows? I don't know.
I mean, I'd be happy at this point with week 9.
Oh, me too. Me too. I mean, I was thinking they were going to say like week 12 or something.
I mean, at that point, don't you just, I don't know, I guess it depends on what your record looks like, but if your record's not good, why not just, I don't know. We'll see. We'll see how it goes.
Mm-hmm.
Then they kept three defensive ends, Angelo Blackson, and Mario Edwards and Akeem Hicks. Edwards is on a 2-game suspension, so they're going to have to make a roster spot for him when he comes back for game 3. Bilal Nichols, defensive tackle, Karis Tonga, Eddie Goldman, all made the roster. Not surprising. Outside linebackers, Quinn, Mack, Tashawn Gibson.
Travis Gibson.
And Jeremiah Atachu made it, which is not a surprise. Then you got to the inside linebackers. They kept Christian Jones, Alec Ogletree, Roquan Smith, Joel Iwobinawe, Josh Woods. They kept Johnson and they kept Danny Trevathan. They had seven inside linebackers on their roster.
Worth noting, though, that Danny Trevathan is going to be out to start the season.
Yes, but when they first announced it, they hadn't put him on there yet. So everyone's like, why do they have seven inside linebackers? But then, you know, okay, well, it went down to six because Danny Trevathan got starting the season on the injured list. He's eligible to return week four.
Which, yeah, that's a bummer.
From what I'm reading, though, it was that he's fully expected to be back at week four. So yeah, the earliest he's eligible, he will be back. And since then, and I guess we'll go into that in a minute. Cornerbacks, they only had four cornerbacks on the initial roster, which blew my mind.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. Well, yeah, Johnson, Crawford, Shelley, and Vildor.
Yep, that was the initial 53-man roster. And you're like, they kept seven inside linebackers and four cornerbacks. And then they had four safeties, which was not a surprise at all, with Bush, Houston, Carson, Deshaun Gibson, and Eddie Jackson. And you're like, all right, some of these are questionable moves here. And afterwards, they shook it up a little bit. They sign Rashard Perriman, wide receiver, who I think is going to be a good addition if he's healthy. It's just the problem is he's had a tough time staying healthy.
Mm-hmm.
But if he stays healthy, he's a pretty good option. And they could have the fastest wide receiver core in the NFL.
Just wish they were a tad taller.
Yeah, there's not a lot of height in the wide receiver core, but there's a lot of speed. So you just got to make sure that you find ways to get them the ball and give them a little space to run. That's going to be the issue.
Right. And I mean, you know, what worries me with an offensive scheme like that is like, oh God, are we just going to see more bubble screens and stupid stuff like that? You know, that's what worries me is right. That if you're going to try to throw downfield, you're going to be outsized by the secondary.
Right. Yeah. If they start doing bubble screens, then I'm going to bubble scream. Yeah. I'm going to lose my mind. What they need to do is create mismatches and find guys that run a 4-2 against the linebackers, or, you know, things like that. They have to create mismatches and they have to, do some natural picks to get guys open, some crossing routes. They got to get guys, fully in a sprint, throw it ahead of them so they can, you know, don't break stride. And you'd be able to give them a little running room. But you're right. The bubble screens and jet sweeps and, you know, reverses and double reverses are just going to be a disaster with this offensive line. And it's just no good.
Yeah. And that's what worries me about this whole thing. I mean, look, you can make things work with guys like this, like you said, create mismatches with speed, and you try to outrun them, you try to outsmart them, because you're not going to be throwing jump balls because these guys aren't going to outjump a lot of these defenders.
The Bears did make a few extra moves, though. They did add a few corners, so now they're up to six corners. They kept Artie Burns, who, you know, hasn't played the last 2 years because of injury. They kept Duke Shelley, who I hope he plays better than he did in the preseason.
You would hope.
Jalon Johnson, Kendall Vildor, Crawford, and Marquis Christian, who actually did play well in the preseason.
Mm-hmm.
So, oh, and they kept the unsurprising Cairo Santos, Pat O'Donnell, and Patrick Scales as your special teamers.
Shocking.
So I am confused how, you know, they don't have a lot of experience on the cornerback front. you know, Marquis Christian is a guy who's a general defensive back. He plays safety and corner. I think you're going to probably see him mostly in the slot, which means that, you know, him and Duke Shelley are the slot guys. I'm a little bit surprised that they didn't bring back Trufant. You know, he's had some injuries, but he's a guy with experience and, you know, was a Pro Bowler not too long ago.
Yeah, I agree. I thought Trufant was going to make it. And I honestly kind of wish it was that way, but you know, if this can work, we'll see. I don't know. But cornerbacks worry me outside Jalon Johnson. I think Jalon Johnson has the talent to be a Pro Bowl level cornerback. Is he gonna be healthy too? He's had the history of injuries. He had some injuries last year, he had some injuries in college. We've seen the shoulder issues. I mean, really, they need Jalon Johnson to play 16 games this year if they want a chance. I mean, look, we've always said that the front seven makes your secondary better, but you can't rely on the front seven. I mean, your secondary is going to have to make plays.
Absolutely. Secondary is going to have to make plays. You just hope that they don't play that weak zone game. The problem last year was they played a zone, guys knew where to go in the zone, and they picked them apart in the soft spots. I hope that the pass rush is better, where the quarterback doesn't have time and the receivers don't have time to find the soft spot in the zone, but also that the cornerbacks and the defensive backs do something to confuse, at least apply a little bit of confusion to the quarterbacks, so they're not so just straightforward. And that's kind of been a history of what the Bears do, is they've just lined up. They haven't tricked you. They've just been better than you. And if you found a weakness, they were going to exploit it. But I think they need to, with, you know, the inexperience that they have in the defensive backs, I think they're going to have to do, you know, show fronts and show schemes and then switch things up to confuse the wide receiver and the quarterbacks on what they're doing. I think that's going to be the only way they're going to be successful, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree.
Practice squad. They kept a lot of offensive players on the practice squad. So Rodney Adams, who initially made the 53-man roster, but got cut, got put on the practice squad. Daz Newsome, who was the 6th-round draft pick corner or wide receiver, Thomas Graham, the draft pick corner, Charles Snowden, who I'm surprised made it through waivers and is on the practice squad. He showed some good signs, and he was probably one of the most highly sought after undrafted rookies coming out of college. Ryan Nall, Artavis Pierce, Isaiah Coulter, Jonvea Johnson, Dieter Iselin, Arlington Hambright, Tyrone Wheatley Jr., whose dad was a running back at the University of Michigan. I think he played for the New York Giants. So it's weird that his son is an offensive tackle and his dad was a running back. And then they kept another kicker, Brian Johnson, which, not surprising given COVID, that you try to keep a kicker on your practice squad.
And Brian Johnson looked good in the preseason. I saw him in some of the practice sessions and saw a few kicks, obviously, in the preseason games. So you might have two decently reliable kickers, which is nice to have, I guess. Right.
And so those are the offensive players. I'm sorry, Snowden is not. But then they kept, I'm going to butcher his name, Zoya Alafahai, the nose tackle, Sam Kamara, outside linebacker, and Snowden. So they kept just a handful of defensive players and almost all offensive players on their practice squad. But there was another interesting thing that I saw come out, and I don't know if you read this, but ESPN did a simulation where they ran every game during the season 20,000 times using a computer simulation to figure out what they expected records for each team would be and what they and what they expect the playoffs to look like. I don't know if you saw that or not.
I did not. I heard about it, but I didn't actually see the results or anything.
So they had the Bears going 8-9, which I was like, okay, I can buy that. But the way they went 8-9 is they start off 1-4 on their list. And you're like, that's actually kind of impressive that they start 1-4 and end up 8-9. They played winning football the last, you know, three quarters of the season. They also had them making the playoffs, winning a wild card spot during the last week of the season by beating the Vikings. And they had them losing to the 49ers 20-17 in the first round of the playoffs.
Oh, so were the Dave Wannstedt Bears again. Okay, cool.
Well, you know, if you think about it, you're like, okay, if you can make the playoffs with Andy Dalton, then you're like, all right, we're really setting up Justin Fields in a good spot because you expect to be better next year. Reasons why is younger players going to have more experience. You're going to have probably a better offensive line because you'll have Larry Brown with a year under his belt and you'll have Tevin Jenkins healthy, hopefully. You'll have Justin Fields in at quarterback and you'll actually have a whole bunch of money to spend in the offseason.
Yeah, that will be nice. That will at least tell you, hey, there's room for improvement after this year. And after this year, you expect Justin Fields to be your everyday starter.
Right. So the way they broke it down was they had them starting, didn't break down each game, but they started, you know, at certain points, you know, what they, their record would be. So they did after week five, they had the Bears 1-4. And those games are the Rams, the Bengals, the Browns, the Lions, and the Raiders. I'm assuming they win the Lions game out of those five.
I would think so.
And that's disheartening losing to the Bengals and the Raiders.
Yeah, because in my prediction, I did a prediction and my first five, I have them as 3-2. Cause I think that's like one of the easiest stretches technically outside the Rams.
And then the next four games, which are the Green Bay at home, at Tampa, San Francisco at home, and at Pittsburgh, they have them going 2-2.
I have them 1-4 over that.
1-3?
Yeah, 1-3. Sorry. Yeah, 1-3.
I would say that I would agree with your 1-3. But
can you guess which one I picked them to win?
Pittsburgh.
Yes.
Yeah. I think Pittsburgh's not gonna be very good this year.
I don't think they're gonna be that great. And like just going off history, the Bears seem to have their number recently.
Yeah, so I think Ben Roethlisberger is gonna look like dog doo-doo. So I think that's a winnable one. San Francisco, I think, is going to bounce back to form.
Me too.
Tampa's good. Green Bay's good. But I believe they said that they would win the San Francisco game, which I guess if that's of those four,
it's possible.
Second win is, you know, the most possible there.
It's at home, so.
Then they go the next three game or the next 3 weeks. They have them going 2-0 because there's a bye week in there. So that's beating Baltimore and beating Detroit.
I have them 1-1, winning on Thanksgiving, losing to the Ravens.
And then the last 6 weeks, they have them 3-3. So it's Arizona, Green Bay, Minnesota, Seattle, the Giants, and Minnesota.
I have them 2-4.
So let's see. They could... I think they beat the Giants.
Me too.
I think they beat Minnesota at least once.
Yeah, I have them. I said, okay, they're going to split against Minnesota. And in my predictions, I just gave the wins to the home team.
And I think they can pull out one more win between Arizona and Seattle.
I could see them beating Arizona. I could. I don't.
It's in Chicago. It's in Chicago, and it's towards the end of the season. So, It's going to be a little chilly. So in Seattle, I think I don't know what Seattle team's going to be there by week 16 of the season.
Yeah, I'm not afraid of them defensively, obviously, because I think their defense now is absolute shit. But when you have Russell Wilson and DK Metcalf, that is going, I think that's going to cause problems for your secondary big time.
Yeah. But, you know, who knows if Russell Wilson's playing or if he's hurt. You know, he's a smaller guy. He's by week 16, he could be banged up a little bit. And that offensive line, I don't know what they did to improve it, but
not much.
You know, the Bears could do one of those where they just like the Buccaneers did and just, you know, beat him up pretty much.
Well, you know, every year, the Bears always win that game they are heavily favored to lose. You can count on one win against the team that they never were thought they were going to beat. And then they always have that game where everyone thinks it's going to be an easy one and they end up losing. And for me, if I were to guess what those two possibly could, despite my predictions here, I think that surprise win, if you're going to put it somewhere, I would maybe either put it in Green Bay against the Packers, or maybe I'd like to say the Rams week one. I just don't think so. Maybe you could put it against the Browns, because, you know, I said this in my predictions too. The Browns had a very impressive year last year, and on paper, the future looks bright. However, there's a lot of egos on that team, and they're the Browns. I mean, would you be, honestly, even with all the talent they had, would you honestly be that surprised if they just went back to sucking?
At this point, I think I would be surprised. I think they've established themselves. They've got a very good defense, but defenses can regress real quickly. But I think they have a very good defense, and they've got a very good run game with Nick Chubb, who I'm reading multiple, talking heads predicting is Nick Chubb to win the rushing title.
I could see it. He's talented as hell.
And so, you know, and you've got a quarterback that is pretty good, and you got decent wide receivers. You know, I just think it's tough. I don't predict a huge regression from them, and especially playing them at the Dog Pound. I don't see the Bears winning that one, but they could. It just, Bears historically have not come up big versus good defenses. They've come up big. They've come up when they've gotten those wins, it's been able to shut down a really good offense.
Right. Yeah. I mean, look at the last few years. I mean, remember 2018 when they beat the Rams, they beat them with their defense. In 2017, when they beat the Steelers at home, they came up big defensively and got the right running game at the right time. In 2016, when they beat the Vikings on Halloween, you know, again, the defense shut down their offense and they used the running game to burn out clock. 2015, Thanksgiving night, they shut down Aaron Rodgers. They only let him score 13 points at home and they only needed 17 to win that game. And I mean, you could just keep going back and back and look at all those games. You're absolutely right. It was because the defense shut down the offense and the Bears, all they had to do was just enough in those games to win, which wasn't necessarily a lot, because a lot of those surprise wins, most of them really, were all close. I mentioned the Packers score. That was 17-13. I mean, the one against the Vikings in 2016 was a blowout, but 2017, the Steelers, you won that in overtime. 2018, that was a really close game against the Rams, where you pretty much established yourself as a playoff team. So you're absolutely right. And if the Bears were to beat the Browns in the Dog Pound, you would have to shut down Nick Chubb, shut down the run game, make Baker Mayfield throw, and then maybe force a few turnovers. That's what you'd have to do to beat them.
Well, I mean, I think the bigger than that is they're way more likely to do that than to shut down Myles Garrett from getting to whoever's playing quarterback week three.
That's a good point. Good point.
He might lead the NFL in sacks this year. And
so could Aaron Darnold, man.
So it's, if I had to guess at what would be the big upset, I would say Arizona or Green Bay would be the most likely.
I am begging the Bears. Please just beat Green Bay once. I don't care if it's at Soldier Field or at Lambeau Field. I don't want to go out against Aaron Rodgers like they've done pretty much every year, but like three, where they just get swept by him. Like, yeah, just beat him once. Just beat him once. And here's the thing. My final prediction for this team is 7-10. And I did a little poll on my Instagram and got people to respond. Most people said the same thing, 7-10. And I'm like, I don't disagree with you. I think 7-8 wins is the range, the most likely range they get. I think if you get 9 wins, that's because a lot goes right. And I could see them easily getting only 6. I could see that more than them getting 9, but you never know. You never know. The NFL is weird. The NFL is fluky. Weird things happen. Injuries happen. But regardless of where you finish, I feel like they have to beat Green Bay once, at least once. If you get swept by them again, it'll be 3 years in a row you've been swept by them. And like, you'd be getting swept by Green Bay every year since 2014, all but 2 times.
Yeah. I don't think Matt Nagy has beat the Packers.
Once.
He did?
When they won the division.
Okay. Yeah.
The Bears' biggest win against the Packers in over a decade. When they clinched the division in 18.
Yeah, he's got to beat Green Bay at least once this year.
Cause it's funny. You look at his record. He's like, what, 1-5 against Green Bay, but he's got really good records against the Vikings and the Lions. You just need to beat Green Bay. I mean, Nagy's only win against Green Bay was that division clinching game. So he's 0-4 on the road against them. Remember, his first game as Bears head coach was that heartbreaker in week 1 in 2018. And then after they won the division, then they lost 4 straight since that division clincher at Soldier Field.
I mean, that's the thing, is nobody cares about the Vikings and the Lions. It's all about the Packers, because the Packers own this division. You got to beat them.
Yeah. Yeah. That said, though, if they want any sort of chance, they got to beat the Vikings and the Packers, or the Vikings and the Lions as well.
I don't think the Lions are going to be too tough this year. I think this is a lost year for them.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they're going to be that good either. I wonder what Minnesota is going to be like, because honestly, right now, it looks like there's, with Kirk Cousins there, I don't know. It doesn't seem all that peachy in Viking land, but I still do think they have enough talent to compete for a postseason spot. I do.
I think they didn't do themselves any favors by not drafting one of the high-end quarterbacks.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because what are you going to do? I think this is Kirk Cousins' last season, and he hasn't been good. He hasn't been bad. He's been okay. I guess he's been better than okay, but hasn't.
He's not elite.
He's not elite by any stretch, and they're paying him like an elite quarterback.
Right. Honestly, it's kind of the Jay Cutler. Kinda. I want to say it's exactly like it, but remember, the Bears paid Jay Cutler a lot of money, and they were trying to do everything they can to squeeze the elite out of him. And while Jay Cutler had his flashes and he had the tools to be elite, he never really was elite. And that's kind of how I feel about Kirk Cousins, is that, yeah, you could put up some solid stats, more than solid stats, but when it comes to the big time and the big opponents and the big stage, Kirk Cousins just, he's not in that group of the best. He's not Pat Mahomes. He's not Aaron Rodgers. He's not Drew Brees, now retired. He's not Tom Brady. He's not Deshaun Watson. I mean, he's kind of in that middle slash slightly above middle range. Certainly not bad, but.
And what stinks is, I mean, at least for the Vikings, is they've got a very good running back and they've got two good wide receivers. It's if Kirk Cousins fails, it's because Kirk Cousins failed. It's not because there was other issues.
Right. It's not like he doesn't have talented guys around him.
Right. And you expect their defense to be a better, but I don't know that all the experts are calling for the Vikings to regress this year and their coach to be one of the guys on the hot seat to possibly, I think it was, he got the most votes on one of the polls, or, you know, one of the sports networks, you know, ask all their analysts. He got the most votes of who would be fired first.
Yeah. Here's the thing. If Minnesota has another losing season, heck, I think if Minnesota has a losing record by mid-season, I think he's gone. I don't know if you remember, he was on the hot seat last year mid-season.
Yeah, they, you know, he's got to do better.
He has to win. Right. I mean, look at the last few years. Just go back to 2018. So many of those years were spent having really high expectations. In 2017, the Vikings made it to the NFC Championship game with Case Keenum. You know, you had the Minneapolis Miracle and they were in the NFC Championship game. They had a really good regular season. And then after that, you get Kirk Cousins and they said, well, the next 2-3 years with Kirk Cousins is supposed to be a championship window. And in total, you have one playoff win over those few years. You had that really big comeback win in New Orleans in 2019. That was a great moment for the Vikings, but everything else behind Kirk Cousins, 2018, you ended up going, 8-8 and missing the playoffs, 8-7-1 or whatever it was. You know, the Bears beat them in week 17 to eliminate them. And then in 2020, they were sub-500. So the expectations the past 2 years were much higher, and they really just haven't, you know, they haven't been to the NFC Championship game since the Minneapolis Miracle with Case Keenum. So yeah, he's absolutely on the hot seat. He's got to be one of those top guys, like you said.
Yeah. So I think it's a lot of expectations. I'm not a, I'm not expecting the Minnesota Vikings to be that great.
No, I mean, it's Green Bay's division. And right now I don't see them not winning it, but I'm going to say this again. And I say this every year, the Packers. Yeah. You got Aaron Rodgers. Obviously you got Devontae Adams, one of the best, if not the best wide receivers. You have a very good running back in Jones. You have three great weapons on that team. Outside of that, like I do every year, I look at that Packers team and I say, not that special. But when you have Aaron Rodgers, they're probably going to win 12, 13 games.
Well, then at least we know that this is the very last year of Aaron Rodgers as a Packer.
I hope.
They said that there's an agreement in place that if he came back this year, that they would let him go next season.
I mean, it seems most likely that is the, I know that the agreement was in place. I just always have this bad vision. Aaron Rodgers makes amends and agrees to sign max extension with the Green Bay Packers. But I also feel at the same time, I think he's done with the Packers. And I think the Packers are frankly kind of done with him. Because sooner or later, they want Jordan Love to get in there. That's pretty obvious. Like they didn't just draft Jordan Love to make a statement. They drafted him to be the next quarterback up there.
I know. And that's the guy is going to be sitting for at least 2 seasons before he gets any playing time.
Yeah. I mean, hey, Aaron Rodgers sat 05, 06, 07. That's kind of, you know, so it's not like that's ever happened in Green Bay before, but I mean, I just, I ask myself this. Is Aaron Rodgers ever going to just decline? Because he's not. And he's almost 40. Whereas you look at so many other quarterbacks not named Tom Brady, and by this age, they were declining. I mean, look at Peyton Manning's final year when he won the Super Bowl. His stats, I don't have them in front of me, but his Super Bowl stats were not great at all, but he had his defense behind him. You know,
well, don't you remember is people talked about, you know, should Manning play in the Super Bowl?
Right. You remember, I mean, you remember Brett Favre's decline, not just, you know, I mean, he was good in Minnesota in his first year in Minnesota. He played more like Brett Favre, but those last few years of Brett Favre in Green Bay, you had the NFC Championship year in 07, but 05, 06, Brett Favre was really dipping. He was throwing more interceptions than touchdowns. And that final year in 2010, you could definitely see him slowing down. And, you know, you can look at a bunch of other quarterbacks too. You see him slowing down, but it's like, man, Aaron Rodgers, he's almost 40 and he's coming off one of the best seasons ever by a quarterback.
You know, you look at, Aaron Rodgers, and I'm just looking, Charlie Morton just signed a 1-year, $20 million extension with the Braves.
There's another guy that'll just never go away.
but Aaron Rodgers hasn't had a lot of injury history. Just like Tom Brady. Brett Favre had a lot of injuries over the years.
But he played through those.
Peyton Manning had a lot of injuries. You're right. Even if he played through them, though, I think the injuries lead to that aging process.
And Brett Favre, he played in the 90s. It was a little rougher in the 90s, wouldn't you say?
Oh, absolutely. But Aaron Rodgers hasn't really been injured. Tom Brady had, I think, one season with an injury. He's been
and
really
Tom
healthy.
Tom Brady's also just a freak of nature that we've never seen before and might never see again.
But before we move on, there's a couple of non-Bears related football things that I just wanted to bring up that I thought were interesting.
I have one too after you say your stuff.
The first is that Mac Jones is not only making the roster, he's going to be the starting quarterback, and they cut Cam Newton. And then after that, a report came out that Mac Jones was sitting down with Cam Newton after practice and helping him learn the playbook.
Wow. That I did not hear. I knew Cam Newton got cut, but I didn't hear that.
But apparently the Patriots went to Cam Newton and said, you have a choice. You know, do you want to be the backup or would you like us to cut you? And he opted to be cut. And that's why they cut him.
Okay, then.
So the Mac Jones era is going to be, you know, real quick. And I think Bill Belichick is going to really try to prove that he made Tom Brady and Tom Brady didn't make the Patriots.
Oh yeah. He's got a little chip on his shoulder.
So we shall see how that goes. But I mean, Mac Jones looked really good in the preseason. You know, all of the first round quarterbacks did. You know, we saw good things from Justin Fields. We saw good things from Trey Lance. We saw good things from
Trevor Lawrence
and Zach Wilson and Mac Jones. They all looked good. And I'm rooting for this whole class to be good.
I hope it's the best class ever in terms of quarterbacks. That would be really neat.
Yeah, because then it's one of those things is like for the rest of eternity, they start, you know, the best quarterback class ever. And they show Justin Fields and the Bears. I think, yeah. You know, that's going to be awesome. They've got a long way to go to beat the Elway Marino year, but, this class has looked good so far.
Yeah, and now we're going to get to see not all of it, but some of it actually play out. We're going to get to see Mac Jones, like you said, and we'll see Trevor Lawrence. I don't know. What's the 49ers plan with Trey Lance?
I think they're starting Jimmy Garoppolo, but they're going to have packages for Trey Lance. And so they're going to work him in.
Okay.
And don't be surprised if you see Justin Fields come in. I think they're going to have packages for him. The problem is Matt Nagy's a ding dong, and it's and it's going to be something that's so poorly drawn up that it's not going to go well, and it's just going to look dumb as shit.
It's going to be like a T formation, and like he's going to be like on one ends of the T, and they're going to hand the ball off to like Khalil Herbert, and then they're going to like go forward, and then they're going to try to pitch it to Justin Fields, who's going to try to throw it downfield. But when they pitch it to Fields, he's going to be met by three linemen and he's going to go down.
Yeah. He's going to be a decoy. It's going to be a wildcat formation. It's going to be something dumb, and everybody's going to go, oh, look, Justin Fields is in. And then they're going to gear up on him, and then the play's not going to go any. So if he's a decoy, it's going to be like a halfback dive. It's going to be so poorly executed that it's going to make a highlight reel for ESPN, and people are going to laugh at the Bears.
They're going to borrow your McCaskey puke stilts, and they're going to put Justin Fields on the stilts. And they're going to try to snap the ball up to him, and it goes in between his stilted legs. And then everyone's going to be running back, and you're going to see Justin Fields like panic, like trying to stay balanced on those massive stilts as there's all these people running by him. And then, you know, Matt Nagy in the presser is going to be like, yeah, you know, I thought we had a size advantage there, but
yeah, quickly the class that this is always going to, or that, you know, if this works out well, is going to get compared to is the 83 NFL draft, which had Dan Marino, John Elway, and Jim Kelly.
So, yeah. That John Elway guy, he was pretty good, I'd say. Right.
I mean, the, all three of those guys, John Elway, you know, won two Super Bowls, the best Bronco player ever. Dan Marino is the greatest quarterback to ever not win a Super Bowl.
By far.
And Jim Kelly went to four straight Super Bowls.
Yeah.
They didn't win any of them. But that team was so good. They just, you know, ran into a buzzsaw each year. But they just, imagine how good you have to be to go to four straight Super Bowls.
Well, I think it's amazing from two perspectives, because one, you'd think that if you're the Buffalo Bills and you're saying to yourself, if you had a crystal ball and you saw the future and it only said you're going to be in the Super Bowl the next 4 years, you would think that you would win at least just one, right? Like four times, four straight Super Bowls. What are the chances you miss, you lose every single one?
Yeah, it's, you know, it's just, it's tough. I mean, that Giants one, they should have won that Giants one.
Right.
But, you know, it was such a good team, such a good team.
You just wish they could have won one, you know, just one.
But the other thing, the non-Bears football thing, is, did you watch last night's Notre Dame game?
No, I missed it. I was out.
So they went into overtime, and I only watched bits and pieces of it. And then I watched the end when they were up big, and then Florida State came charging back. They went to overtime, and the Florida State kicker missed a field goal, and Notre Dame totally pulled a Matt Nagy, and all they needed to do was a field goal to win the game. So they ran straight up the middle three times and then kicked the field goal, you know, not trying to get the touchdown. And they made the kick, they won the game, and they were interviewing Brian Kelly, the head coach of the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. And they were like, you know, what happened in this game? He's like, it was a problem with execution. Namely, I want to execute all my players. And the lady interviewing him just looked like, what the hell did he just say? And what am I supposed to do with this?
He literally said on national TV, like this was an ES, this was on like broadcast television, and he said he wanted to execute his players. It's like, I don't want to be on that bus tonight.
Yeah. I saw the final score of that game. I'm like, holy cow, that was a close game. I didn't know it was quite like that.
Yeah. But what was the topic that you wanted to discuss?
So I think we just briefly joked about it last week, but I want to talk about this in detail just because it's so mind-blowing. You know all these details about this Bishop Sycamore thing, right?
You know, I know the high level. I don't know all the intricacies, but it's bad.
I mean, this is a high school that like doesn't really even exist.
Isn't it an online high school?
It's like an online high school, and like the PO box was the founder's house. And like their address is these random buildings or something like that. The whole thing, like, you know, when I first heard the story, I thought it was just some random school of guys that wanted to be on ESPN, and they, you know, they kind of duped their way into getting a game where, like, it's like this game really isn't even this school really isn't even a real school technically. Like, I just
weren't some of their players like 21 years old.
Yeah. Yeah. And they were kind of duped into this whole thing themselves. I mean, these were just, it's a group of misfits and randos. Like, it's so wild. And did you see any of the highlights from that game?
Oh, I saw a lot of the highlights. I actually saw every single score, and the other school just dominated that team to such an extent that I was number one. At first I was embarrassed. And then I was worried for the safety of the other team.
Well, that's what they were saying too, like on the broadcast when it was like, you know, 40, whatever to nothing, they were saying, you know, this could be a safety issue. Here's the quote. This was from, let's see this. Who said this? It was Anish Shroff on ESPN saying, quote, "There's got to be a point where you do worry about health and safety, just like you said." And the other thing that was just so funny to hear over the broadcast was the play-by-play guy was like, "You know, this school claims they have a bunch of D1 recruits, and our database is not showing anything." Like, he was saying on air, like, these guys are claiming something and we're not finding anything on these guys. So what I wonder is, how the hell were they able to get onto the broadcast in the first place? How were they scheduled to play IMG Academy on ESPN? I mean, who shouldn't there be people at ESPN doing the actual research and, well, showing the graphics?
From what I'm reading, ESPN contracts somebody out for the high school games to schedule the high school games that'll be broadcast on ESPN. So they're putting the blame on them, saying they didn't do their research. We pay them to do the research. And that might be true, because, you know, how else? I mean, you know, otherwise you're hiring somebody, you're paying somebody on your staff to follow high school football. And that just doesn't seem profitable, especially when ESPN is trimming the fat. So I wouldn't be shocked at that, but, you know, still, like, if you've never heard of this school,
it's the biggest broadcasting company of sports in the world. This isn't like a local NBC Chicago. This is ESPN.
Yeah, it's still embarrassing.
And here's some of the other things I want to point out too. Just as I said earlier, the state listed a PO box as its mailing address and its physical address as being a sports training facility in Columbus. the Roman Catholic Archdiocese of Columbus had no record of any bishop named Sycamore, nor any parochial, I don't know how you pronounce it, schools by that name in their diocese throughout their history. So, you know, this was like, okay, there's nothing on these guys. And the governor, Mike DeWine, announced that the Ohio Department of Education would be opening investigation into the school's educational operations. So obviously this is being investigated and people are trying to get more down to the root of this whole thing. But I just think it's crazy how it's like you could put all this stuff together and here's all these other outlets coming out saying, I mean, the Roman Catholic diocese is like, no, we don't have any bishops named Sycamore. We never did. We never had any schools by this name. It's just nuts. Like, yeah, I mean, I could see you getting away. You could get away with it in the old days, but in a day where there's so much information available.
I mean, I don't know. On one hand, I can buy the argument that ESPN is like, well, we hire somebody to do this. I think at some level, then you hire somebody to make sure that they get the best game. But don't you at least throw a Google search in there?
Right. I mean,
Google these teams.
Don't you think that there's a list, like lists of top high school prospects out there?
There are. There absolutely are.
IHSA probably has lists on their website and all sorts of other outlets. I mean, it's no secret who a lot of the star athletes are that are being scouted by some of the biggest programs. I mean, if you're like, especially for D1, if you're being recruited by D1, you got to be the best of the best. And if you got, you know, great programs like Auburn or Alabama or Clemson coming after you, you know, it's not exactly a secret.
And the funny thing is like when you play against these guys, like, you know, like I played high school football and we had a couple guys that went D1 and they weren't even like the top schools. Like a guy on my team went to Northern Illinois before Northern Illinois was actually became a decent football school. Mm-hmm. They were just back when they were just like a nobody's squad. And you could tell he was just so much bigger and stronger than everybody else. You know, we had a guy that was played for our rival high school that actually went on to play for the Dallas Cowboys, and Bill Parcells cut him when he drunk drove and killed somebody in an accident.
Ooh!
But you know, he was really good, and you could see it as a freshman. He was really good. You could just see these players. And
yeah,
like, you know, when you see Bishop Sycamore on the schedule, don't other teams in that area go, how does this school that nobody's heard of? I don't know any of these players. How are they getting, like, doesn't somebody raise a flag? Doesn't buzz come, like, local papers? Why? Like, if there's a local Ohio school, why aren't the newspapers running that? And then their people questioning it, because you have like, you're like, you know, in Chicago, you have like the Southtown Economist and like some other local papers. Even the Sun-Times would be like, if there was a Chicago school that nobody ever heard of, that was an online school that was getting an ESPN game, it would be like somebody would write about it and be like, what is this? What's going on? You know?
And this is Columbus, Ohio. It's not like it's but in the middle of nowhere. I mean, Columbus, Ohio, it's not exactly Chicago, New York or LA, but it's a notable city.
It's where Ohio State is. It's a big, it's like, a, you know, it's a fairly large size city as far as, you know, non-Chicago Midwest cities go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they're, you know,
they have an airport.
They do. They like do.
I've flown into it.
It's a big football community there. So people know about this stuff. And when you, who the hell's Bishop Sycamore? Like, you know, you go around here, you have a lot of these Catholic schools, you know, you have Fenwick and IC by us, who's won championships, and
Brother Rice and Mount Carmel. And
yeah, sure. Yeah. My, some cousins of mine went to Mount Carmel, and, you know, you know, these schools because they're in the news, you know, that the athletics in there are in the news, and you know, they put together some pretty dang good teams. So you hear about them. If there was just some team that nobody heard of, you would think some people would be like, who the hell is that? And I'm reading about the conception of this organization, and it was originally called Christians of Faith Academy, COF, in 2018. A federal investigation was opened to look into COF for the use of counterfeit currency, credit and debit card fraud, computer fraud, and other potential crimes. However, it was shut down after just one season and became Bishop Sycamore. Leroy Johnson, the former head coach, claims that they had ties to it in the third district of the African Methodist Episcopal Church, AME, and had plans to build a massive campus. I mean, this whole thing is just weird. It's like you're trying to say you have a reputation. You don't have a reputation, but like you're acting like you've been there and that you're going to be doing these great things, that you're destined for these great things, even though this reputation you claim to have and this value you claim to have doesn't exist.
And I don't blame the players at all, because you know what
either.
Is we've seen so much of this with basketball, like schools where that, you know, what's his name that the Bulls just got rid of that. They overpaid for several years and stunk.
Lowry.
No.
Or Cristiano Felicio.
Felicio came from one of these like basketball programs where they claim that they have like, you know, all these good talents and they can get you in to places if you play for them, and you end up, you know, broke and like barely eating food and living in somebody's basement. Like you've seen a lot of this with like basketball programs, but like not with football. And you know, I could see though a kid that's like, you know, I want this opportunity, and they're telling me that they have Division I players, then there's going to be scouts there, and I'm actually going to be able to have real scouts watch me play. And it's that's appealing. And to a kid that, you know, a lot of them were like JUCO players that came back to high school. I mean, if that's what your goal is to play in the NFL, then that's, or to play at least Division I, that's an appealing thing. And you know, you suspend disbelief in order to, you know, rationalize that. You know, a lot older and wiser people have fallen for bigger scams.
Yeah. Yeah, no, these kids clearly got duped, and some of them have been coming out and telling the stories, and they were kind of saying like, look, we had to take food from a 7-Eleven because we didn't have anything. You know, that's rough.
But one last thing. What's your final prediction for the score for Bears Rams?
I'm going to say Rams 31, Bears 17.
I'm going. I'm going 27-16 Rams.
Okay, so not that different.
Yeah, I think they score one touchdown, maybe a defensive touchdown, and then the couple of field goals, three field goals.
I think they'll get a touchdown, a field goal, and then they'll get a garbage time touchdown.
That's a possibility too.
And I see it being one of those games where in the first half, the Bears clearly aren't the better team, but they're keeping it close. And then just second half, it all just goes to shit. The defense gets tired and just, you know, everyone bows out. So that's how I see it going. Hope I'm wrong. I do. But I definitely am not predicting the Bears to win this one. Heck, even if Justin Fields was in there, I still probably wouldn't predict the Bears to win it. I just think the Rams right now are the better team. And a key weakness for the Bears is the offensive line. And when you're going up against an elite defense like the Rams, that's tough for anybody to beat.
With a true offensive genius with an actual quarterback.
Yeah, Yeah, he's got a quarterback now.
Matt Stafford, we've all joked about him and how the Bears own him because he's played for the Lions. But he's a really good quarterback, and you put him in with an actual offense, with actual weapons, and an actual offensive coach, and you're going to be like, oh, crap, this guy's actually really good.
Yeah, I mean, the Rams, they got a shot. They got a shot to contend for a Super Bowl this year. And I'm happy for Matt Stafford because I've always respected his talent. You know, I've respected it more as the time goes on. You know, for a while I thought, yeah, he's overall good, but he's not that good. But I think he can be really good. If you give him a good team like the Rams, you could see him do some good things.
Yeah, I mean, I've never hated him. You know, I really don't like Kirk Cousins. I hate Aaron Rodgers. I've always respected Matt Stafford. I think, you know, he's a tough guy, and he has played, you know, his heart out for a terrible franchise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, even my friend who's a Lions fan is rooting hard for the Rams. Cause he's like, you know what? He deserved better than all those years in Detroit.
Yeah. I have a friend that's a Lions fan. That's still rooting for Stafford.
I mean, why, if you were a Lions fan, why wouldn't you root for Stafford? Honestly. Yeah. I mean, honestly, unless he's playing the Bears, I'm kind of rooting for him. Like, I'm glad that a guy like him is finally on a good team.
Yeah, I'm curious to see what that Rams offense is going to look like after week one.
Yeah. Right now, I hope they get stopped. But
yeah, I hope they hit a road bump and struggle. But, I think come midseason, they're just going to look good.
Yeah, I think so, too.
All right. Do you want to talk White Sox or you want to talk Cubs?
We could talk Sox first. They're the better team of the two. Let's be real.
Yeah, they are. You know, they've had a little bit of up and downs here this past week after just destroying the Cubs. They lost the series to Kansas City, and they beat Pittsburgh. But the issue has been, you know, and I don't know if these are real injuries or if they're, oh, hey, somebody's a little sore. Let's put them on the 10-day disabled list, getting ready for so they're healthy for the playoffs. But
it's Lucas, kind of what I think this is.
Lucas Giolito is on the injured list. Lance Lynn is on the injured list. Carlos Rodon is on the injured list. Adam Engel on the injured list. Tim Anderson on the injured list.
I'm not convinced those are legit injuries. It's more, you're sore.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we'll talk about a little bit more at the Cubs, but some of the pitchers got lit up, and I think Lance Lynn had a rough outing. Giolito's had a couple of okay outings. I think, you know, hey, let's freshen them up.
Yeah, because I somebody mentioned there was a stat where they threw, like, I don't know if it was the most pitches by starters, but like, I think they had like among the most innings by starters, and there was concern that overwork by the end of the year was going to be an issue. So this is an opportunity when you have everything. I mean, you have the division won, so, you know, why push it too much, I guess. I just, you know, I hope that doesn't bite them in terms of home field, but if they're really as good as they say they are, then hopefully it won't matter as much.
Yeah. I mean, I would much rather have Tim Anderson's hamstring feeling, you know, warm and fuzzy, and Carlos Rodon's shoulder feeling fresh, in a month than, have some nagging injuries. They've got a huge, roughly a double digit lead in the division. You know, I'm not concerned about it. They should get those things out of the way now. And the nice thing is even if they go on a rough stretch because of guys on the injured list, one of the last series they have in the season is a 5-game set against Cleveland. So, that's a series that you could pack away a few extra game lead.
Honestly, if you're a White Sox, you're not even looking at the standings at this point, are you?
No. But even going to that Cleveland series is playing a 5-game stretch against the only team ahead of you. If you're Cleveland, You know, in one way you're like, okay, that's nice because I control my destiny. I could gain five games. But when you really think about it, is how often are you able to beat a division leading team five straight games in a five game series to do that?
Insanely rare. And yeah. Won't everything be clinched by then?
I mean, even if it wasn't, you know, the odds are, even if you win that series, you're winning by one game. You're winning three of the five.
Yeah.
It's, okay. You gained one game and it took five games to win, to take one game in the standings. That's rough. So honestly, the schedule is stacking up nice for the White Sox. They have 25 games left. They have like roughly a 10 game lead, and they've still got three games against Anaheim, three games against Texas, three games against Detroit, six against Detroit, five against Cleveland. So
the roughest part is over with their schedule.
Yeah, absolutely. And, they've got three against Oakland, three against Boston. After that, that's their next six games. After that, it should be, you know, they should be able to put it in cruise control.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, again, you're really kind of playing for home field advantage, if anything, but you're not playing for the playoffs. You already have that basically clinched and locked up. But yeah, I mean, honestly, I think most of these injuries are more precautionary. Nothing really serious to be worried about. If they're fresh by the postseason, then I think they're the team to beat, honestly.
Yeah. It's just going to be getting through this tough stretch because, you know, I think your Jimmy Lambert is going to start the next game. So he's going to start game one against Oakland. That's tough because Jimmy Lambert has been dreadful this year. His ERA he's basically giving up one run an inning average. In his couple of games in the bigs, and he's got a 5 ERA in the minors in AAA. So that's brutal. You kind of chalk that one up as a loss. And then Wednesday you got Dallas Keuchel, who's not been much better than that. He has been brutal the last several weeks.
Yeah, he's been bad. I mean, Kansas City, he got lit up yet again on the night they had Adam Amin and Stacey King calling the game.
Yeah, Keuchel has been brutal.
Now, is it that weird on-off thing he seems to do every year, or do you think age is just finally catching up to him?
I don't know. I'm not sure. He started off the season fine and then just hit a road bump and then everything went off. And that's the tough thing is it fatigue where, you know, you just, you hit a wall, and like, wouldn't he be a good player on a path to, you know, to put him on the disabled list or give him a couple games off to get rested up? This, you know, you want to see him get in a, yeah, you know, you'd rather do that now as opposed to later, because if you do it too late, then you don't know what you're getting before the playoffs start. You want to do it sort of now, so when he comes back, he's got a little bit of a runway to get us, you know, to get back in the groove, and you know, where you can see did that help at all?
Well, you know, I just can't help but wonder if Keuchel's already the odd man out, so they just need somebody to pitch while these other guys are getting rest. I wonder if that factors into it.
Yeah, if you look at the probables for the White Sox, and it's literally Lambert, Keuchel, and Reynaldo Lopez the next three games.
Yeah.
And then TBD.
Oh, so, good old TBD. He's been on every team.
I know, but he just never has a good season though.
No. I mean, I'm just going back to Dallas Keuchel really quick, just looking at his last three games, he's given up 9 runs total in the last three games. And no, sorry, not 9 runs. Sorry, I missed. It's even worse than I thought. He's given up 6 runs in each game, the last three games. So you look right there, that's 18 runs in the last three games. And if you put the combined innings together, that's 9 innings. So 18 runs in 9 innings.
No bueno.
No. And it says runs. I don't know if that's earned. It just says R. But either way, it has not been good.
And on top of that, you've had some rough pitching from your starters, and not just starters. Kopech had a rough outing the other day in relief. But your offense has really struggled, and you've getting guys healthy again. But honestly, Tim Anderson is the heart and soul and the engine that drives your offense. And without him, you're running into the same problem that the Cubs have had the last several years, is they don't have a leadoff guy. They don't have an engine that drives that, that doesn't drive that offense.
Yeah. You know? Tim Anderson means so much to that team in so many ways.
And you basically end up with a bunch of good hitters that can't put anything together. It's all individual efforts. When you have a Tim Anderson, it's like a cohesive offense.
Right.
So he's going to be hugely important come the playoffs.
Yeah. I mean, if him and Robert and Aloy are healthy, then look on them to go on a long run, because that's hard to beat. I mean, I said before, I think Robert's going to be a top 10 player for a long time. That guy's skills are just incredible. You hope he doesn't suffer too many more injuries.
Right. Right. But you know, he's been great lately, and Yasmani Grandal has been great lately.
On a tear since he came back.
And those have been the reason that the White Sox have won recently, because it hasn't been pitching.
Yeah, it's been with the offense. Yeah.
I mean, you know, you look against Kansas City, who's not a good team, and in three games you gave up 20 runs in three games.
I do have to give credit, though, one thing to KC, and that's Salvador Perez. You know, he's got 40 homers now.
For real?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, he hit his 40th, I think, against Cease the other day. I didn't realize he was doing that good. You don't hear about him because he's on a bad Royals team. You hear about Ohtani because he's Ohtani, which you should hear about him every day because he's awesome. You hear about Fernando Tatis. You hear about Vladdy, but Salvi Perez, a guy who has been so good in this league for so long, you barely heard about him. And I just realize now how good he's doing right now.
Yeah. So Shohei Ohtani, he's only two behind in home runs behind Shohei Ohtani.
And if I know this correctly, it's probably a career high for him in home runs for Perez. I mean, he's always been such a good player, but I don't ever remember him hitting 40 plus. Let me look back. No, yeah, this is far and away a career high, because before his career high was 27 home runs. For a catcher, that alone is really good, but man, he has 41 home runs. And also, you know, he made the All-Star game this year. That was his seventh All-Star game. This guy is a seven-time All-Star, five-time Gold Glove winner, three-time Silver Slugger winner, a World Series champion, and a World Series MVP. If you want to talk about one of the most underrated stars in this game, I think you got to start talking about Salvador Perez.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a name that is underrated.
Yeah.
He's also leading Major League Baseball in RBIs. He's
on
second,
a bad Royals team too. Yeah, that's impressive.
He's leading all of baseball in RBIs. Was actually tied with Jose Abreu. He's second in all of baseball in home runs. Nick Castellanos is leading all of baseball in batting average.
Bring him back to the North side.
I would love to have him.
He's going to opt out. Being cheap and pay him.
I know. Pay him. If we had Castellanos with Frank Schwindel, mm-hmm. that's a nice 1-2 combo.
Mm-hmm.
But finishing up with the White Sox, is this next 2 weeks are probably going to be
rough ones, you know, with facing Boston, who's really on life, not life support, but they're clinging to that last wild card spot.
It's a tight race.
It's a tight race. They're really struggling to win here and really, you know, clawing to keep it. Oakland is fighting for it as well. They're two good teams, and you're reeling a little bit with injuries and throwing scrubs out there to pitch. You know, these next couple weeks might be a little rough, but they're going to get better. I mean, you finish the season after these 2-3 game series, you have Anaheim, Texas, Detroit, Cleveland, Cincinnati, Detroit to wrap up the season. So you've got a huge lead in hand. You've got the schedule on your side. Just be patient with these next 2 weeks.
Yeah, for sure.
Then the other side of town, you've got the Cubs, who just today won their 7th game in a row.
Frank Schwindel. Who the fuck is Anthony Rizzo? Frank Schwindel.
The Cubs have won 7 games in a row. They didn't do that when they had Javi Baez and Anthony Rizzo and Chris Bryant. They didn't do that. They have done it with Ortega and Schwindel and Wisdom.
And Ian Happ.
And Ian Happ, who has been
tearing the cover off the ball right now.
Absolutely. And the young pitchers are starting to do okay.
The veterans suck ass, but yeah, you're right. The young pitchers are looking pretty good.
Alzolay, since he's come back from the injured list, has looked real good.
Alzolay is a reliever, and that's perfectly okay.
I'm okay with that. He's been really good. Even long relief, would he pitch four or five innings?
Yeah, four. He got innings a 4-inning save.
Yeah.
And he looks great.
He looked great. Justin Steele has looked, I mean, he had a rough 6th inning today. But
the first five innings were immaculate.
Yeah, first 5 innings looked great. But Zach Davies has been brutal. Hendricks has been brutal.
Yeah, the Hendricks, man, that's been bad to watch.
But on Wednesday, you had Justin Steele and Albert Alzolay combined for 9 innings, 2 hits, no runs, 8 strikeouts.
And on the road, too.
Yeah, against a decent Minnesota team.
Yeah, I mean, they ain't great, but they ain't terrible.
And all of your offense on that game was Frank Schwindel.
Frank the Tank. I want to see, he's just like the most average looking, like, smiley guy. I just want to see him, like, in like the cockpit of a Panzer, and he's just rolling down like Michigan Avenue in a tank, and he's got that big smile on his face.
That would be awesome if somebody lent him a tank that he could drive to the stadium and park in the player lot.
Oh, that would be so sick. Like, here's all these cars going by, and then here's this tank just rolling on through. And then nobody just questions it. Everyone just goes, oh, it's Frank Schwindel. Like, everyone just knows, oh, it's just Frank the Tank.
But, I mean, as for Azalea, I'm still not going to rule out he's not a starter in the league. But if he ends up being a really good reliever, okay. You know, but I think for the Cubs' long-term success, I think you've got to find 3 major league baseball quality starters somewhere in your minor league system.
Well, I don't know if you heard this, but Jordan Wicks made his debut the other day. He pitched 1 scoreless inning. So he's starting his professional career.
Yes, I did hear that. So, but somewhere in the Cubs farm system, before they're good, you're going to have to find 3 quality starters.
And I mean, here's the thing too, man. The soft stuff doesn't do it anymore. And I don't know what to make of Kyle Hendricks, because I just watching him, it seems like it's a little bit of everything. There are times where you think, okay, that's not a bad changeup he threw, but the batter clearly knew it was coming, so he went down and reached for it. So maybe you wonder, is he tipping at some point? And then there are times where you just watch him pitch, and it was an 88 mile an hour fastball right down the middle. So of course it's going to get hit. I don't know if he's just having a bad year. I don't know if maybe he's just struggling with mechanics or something mentally, or if it's worst case scenario where he's hit his peak and the new generation of players knows how to hit that type of stuff better than the last one did, those last batters he faced. So I don't really know. We'll have to see. All I can certainly say, though, is, and this is no disrespect to Kyle Hendricks, who has ended up being one of the great pieces of this core and essential to winning that World Series, a guy who I'll always be a fan of, but he cannot be your ace going forward. He can be in your rotation. Maybe he's your solidified number three, but you can't in this day and age rely on your number one ace being a guy that throws less than 90 miles an hour. For the longest time, you could find craftiness. You could find stuff. The game has evolved. You need to find guys that can blow some smoke by you. That's what I truly believe. In this day and age, it is velocity and movement is more important than ever. Because if you throw even something well-located softly, this is just my opinion. I don't have actual numbers to back this up. I just feel like ball players, sluggers, athletes these days, you can locate something soft somewhere nice, they're going to find a way to crush it.
Yeah. Especially when you have Alec Mills in your rotation too.
And to Alec Mills' credit though, like he's been pretty dang solid. Like I gotta give him props. He's a five starter. Let's make that very clear. He's a five starter. But if he's your five starter, that's a good five starter. And if you want your 4-5 to be more soft tossing, crafty guys like a Hendricks Mills, okay. But you're at least your top two, you need stuff. Like actual stuff. That seems reasonable, right?
I think it's very reasonable.
I mean, look at most rotations now for contending teams. Look at the White Sox. You know, you got a lot of good stuff from Lance Lynn and Carlos Rodon. You look at the Yankees, look at Garrett Cole, look what he can do. Look at the frickin' Dodgers, whether it's Max Scherzer or Clayton Kershaw or, what's his face? Throws really hard. I mean, they all throw really hard. Why am I blanking on his name? Walker Buehler. That's who I'm thinking of. You look at those contending teams. All those guys, they have stuff. You know, they have legitimate stuff. That's what the Cubs need. Give me stuff, not crafty soft tossers. Just, we can't be reliant on that anymore.
Well, I mean, and then Keegan Thompson is not a fireballer either.
No, he's not. I was really happy, though, to see Justin Steele today. You look at some of his strikeouts. I can't remember exactly who he struck out, but he threw a 95 mile an hour fastball right in on the outside on the inside corner, right at the hands for a swing and miss. You love to see that. It's like, okay, he's not just going up there throwing 91, 92. He's throwing at least mid 90s. It's really good to see.
Yeah. I mean, he's got a decent fastball. He's above average on his fastball. He's got the spin on his fastball is real good. He's got, you know, Justin Steele's actually has the stuff to be what you're looking for in an actual starter for a winning team.
Right. I mean, he's probably the hardest thrower in this rotation right now. I mean, if you look at who's in it, because Alzolay's now in the bullpen. You have Kyle Hendricks and Alec Mills who don't throw hard at all. Zach Davies also doesn't throw hard at all. I mean, you have three junk ballers, essentially, in your rotation right now. At least you could say Kyle Hendricks, over his career, has been more than just a junk baller. He's located very well and actually put some good movement on his pitches. But, you know, you have three guys that don't throw hard. That, you know, that's just not going to cut it these days.
Yeah, so like I said, is you need three quality starters coming out of this minor league system. So that you know, not including Hendricks, not including Mills. That's Alzolay. That's Steele. That's Wick. That's, you know, whoever else is in your minor league system. That's, you've got to get three quality starters out of that.
I agree. Exactly. The good news, I think, out of the Cubs pitching staff, if there is good news, the middle of the bullpen looks bad. But, it, I mean, really, it's just pieced together at this point. Whereas the future of the back end of your bullpen, you actually see some promise there. You're seeing Rowan Wick shake off some of the rust. And you're seeing him throw that curveball a little better and the fastballs at 94, 95. Manuel Rodriguez, after a rough start, the guy could throw some gas. He's been pitching a lot better recently. Heck, even the veteran lefty Adam Morgan has looked pretty good. And then you got Cody Hoyer from you got from the Sox, where he's getting outs. And he's got a 106 ERA, a 381 FIP with the Cubs. And I don't think this is updated after today's game because he pitched another inning today. The thing you want to see from him, though, is you want to see him more bats. He's not striking out a lot of guys because White Sox fans especially will remember last year when he was really good last year, he had 9.5 strikeouts per nine. And this year with the White Sox, he had 9.1 with the White Sox, but with the Cubs, it's 5.3. He's getting outs a lot more efficiently with the Cubs, but he's not missing a lot of bats, but at least you're seeing him execute. If he can get more swings and misses, you know, as we finish off and then going into next year, there's another promising piece. So at least there's some stuff in the bullpen. It's got a long way to go to build up, but right now on the major league roster, if you're looking at promising pitching, you're looking at mainly the bullpen and then Justin Steele. And I'm counting Alzolay right now as bullpen because he's going to be in the bullpen the rest of the year.
Yeah, I was actually going to bring up Hoyer. I think for the White Sox, that was a throw in because he was not the same guy as he was last year. For the Cubs, I think that was a big get. I think he's actually going to be a plus piece for you.
Yeah, I mean, it could be a good find for Jed Hoyer.
I think he still could be your closer of the future. If not, I think he's still at least a good setup man. And I think that's very important. You know, your eighth inning guy, or as they call him now, a high leverage guy. I think that's important. And I think he is one. He's pitched
and he can go multiple innings.
Yes. I think he's been a good pickup for the Cubs. And, you know, like I said, is Madrigal and Hoyer as good as the top closer that you gave up in Kimbrel for this year? Absolutely not. But when you look at where they are in this, you know, in their trajectories, Hoyer and Madrigal are going to be much more important to the Cubs than this next year, or even if they would have picked up the option next year for Kimbrel, then he would have been for your team.
Right. I mean, I think the Cubs, when they traded away all the relievers, and, you know, a lot of relievers are just kind of grown and randomly found, I think the Cubs needed to find a reliever that could be a long-term potential solution that was still young. And that's what you got in Cody Hoyer. And, you know, you sign your Sheriffs and your Ryan Taperas and your Steve Cishek's year in, year out. But I think there's something valuable of at least trying to build somewhat of a core of a bullpen that you can rely on for multiple years, because bullpens are fickle. We all know that relievers are fickle, but the more you try to stock up and build on some of these guys, the more room you might have for experimentation, because, you know, if one doesn't work, then you have something to fall back on instead of just trying to scramble to find something, because bullpens are deeper and more important than ever. So it's having guys you can build around for the long term for the bullpen, I think that's more important than ever. So I'm glad that Hoyer kept that in mind when he got Hoyer.
Right. And I'm just quickly looking through some of the Cubs minor league pitchers. Braylon Marquez has got some fire to his pitch. He can hit 99.
Yeah, but he hasn't pitched once this year. And
I know, but he's coming. He's coming.
He was their top prospect for a good 2 years.
Jordan Wicks throws the mid to upper 90s, like 95-ish. It's like how that mid.
They say he's got the build of John Lester with a changeup of Cole Hamels. And if he lives up to that expectation, sounds like a good deal.
Cole Franklin has brought his fastball up from upper 80s to upper 90s, which is awesome.
That's impressive.
So, you know, you've got some guys that can throw a little heat. Now it's nurturing them along to the bigs. Because, I mean, I guess health-wise, you expect Braylon Marquez probably next year. Jordan Wicks next year. Cole Franklin probably sometime next year. These are all guys that are coming.
Yeah, and then, you add that on. You hope to have Justin Steele, you know, obviously keep growing next year. And maybe Manny Rodriguez establishes himself as something. And then, you know, Cody Hoyer can, you know, keep working on his craft. So, I mean, really, the rotation is where I worry the most. Because you look at a lot of these guys and, you know, Elsley is not really a prospect anymore. He's had plenty of time. I don't know exactly what the cutoff is, but, you know, you look at a lot of these guys and most of them have bullpen potential. Like, I think Alzolay is going to end up being that long reliever spot starter. I think Braylon Marquez is going to be a reliever. Obviously, Cody Hoyer is a reliever. Manuel Rodriguez is probably going to be a reliever. We'll see what happens with Cole Franklin. Jordan Wicks is the one guy in the system where you're like, he's number one going to be a starter. And I wish they had a few more of those guys. But, you know, maybe they find somebody that's not a top prospect. I mean, it happens. There are random guys that come out of a system and they pitch well. You hope you could find some magic in there.
And then you've got Ryan Jensen, who you were really excited about, but has pitched like dog doo-doo this year.
Yeah, and it's kind of the same thing with Corey Abbott, too. That didn't go so well.
Why can't this team develop pitchers?
They either can't develop pitchers, or when they do, they get hurt, a la Mark Pryor, Kerry Wood.
But I want to talk about Frank Schwindel. Currently, as it stands right now, the guy's slash line is 374, 421, 699, with an OPS of 1120.
Who would have thought that, like, Frank Schwindel would see his face like on cardboard signs in the stands? Like, who would have thought?
We joked before the trade deadline when the Cubs picked up Frank Schwindel off of waivers. We were like, oh, well, I guess, you know, does that mean that they can trade Anthony Rizzo because they picked up a first baseman off of waivers? And we're like, no, you know, that doesn't mean anything. And they went ahead and traded Anthony Rizzo, who's been playing well for the Yankees. And, but he hasn't been Frank Schwindel. And Frank Schwindel has, I don't know how sustainable this is, but we're going to ride this lightning because he's playing fantastic.
Yeah, he is. He is. And I mean, it seems like your typical lightning in a bottle story. I mean, look at Patrick Wisdom. The guy hits a ton of home runs, but he's got a lot of holes in his swing. And, you know, like I said before, I think he's like a better version of Mike Ault, but you can't take away from the good he's done here. I mean, he's one home run away from tying the Cubs' all-time rookie record for home runs in a season, and he's played not a full season yet. So there's something to be said about that. But if you want to look at Frank Schwindel and compare him to a guy like Patrick Wisdom, I mean, here's one thing that stands out, is that Patrick Wisdom's K rate is like 40%. That's really high. Whereas Frank Schwindel's is less than 20%. I'm not saying it's elite, but it's not like he's going up there and just getting either home runs or lucky hits. You've seen him have a nice approach to his game. Example, today, game-winning hit against the Reds. It's 0-2, and he gets a pitch away, and he goes ahead, protects, and shoots it into the unoccupied gap on the right side of the infield for a hit. He looked like a competent batter out there. I think there's something to be said about giving him credit for doing that kind of thing. And Sean, I was at yesterday's game, Sunday's 11-8 win over the Pirates, a game which saw a record 3 go-ahead grand slams hit in one game, never been done before. And the pitch he hit for that grand slam, that was like in the dirt. It was like a curve in the dirt, and he went down and he golfed it out. It was like, you could tell the way he swung, like literally bending down, like golf swinging it, like with one hand, and he hit a game-winning grand slam. Like, that's impressive.
He's looked so good. And you're right. His K rate is not like, oh, that's elite. That's Tony Gwynn type level. But look at his K rate compared to anybody else that has a 1,000 OPS or more.
Mm-hmm.
And it's comparatively, it's elite.
Right. I mean, like, even with Patrick Wisdom, you know, he's been hot and cold, but even in his hottest moments, he's still striking out a lot. And I don't mean to pick on Patrick Wisdom. I'm just pointing that out.
Patrick Wisdom is a nice player for when you're competing during a rebuild. He's not a player that you have on your team during a window to win.
Right, exactly. I mean, when he hits him, he hits him. I mean, there was a game, I think it was against, the Rockies. He had a home run that like hit off the base of the yellow building across the street. Like, the dude's got some serious power. And to his credit too, he can put a good at bat together, but you know, he is susceptible a lot at swinging and missing.
Yeah. I'm not pooping on Patrick Wisdom. He has had a fantastic year. It's just, he's kind of he will put a good at bat, but he will strike out a lot, but he's got some power on him.
Yeah, he does. He's got some serious power. Just really quickly, you mentioned Tony Gwynn and you mentioned strikeout rate. Do you know what his all-time highest K rate is, if you had to guess?
So his best season with the lowest rate?
His worst season, the highest percent. Yeah.
Man. God, 10%,
8%. That was the highest K rate he ever had, was 8%.
Was that early in his career or late?
That was the final year of his career.
But he didn't even play that many games in his final year. He didn't even play a half season.
He played 71.
Okay.
But still.
But I bet he still batted over 320.
He batted 324, 384, 461.
And what's his career strikeout rate? Like 4%?
4.2%. His career walk rate is 7.7%.
That's insane to think that your strikeout, your walk to strikeout record is, you know, 2-1 in the crazy way.
Yeah, I know.
What's his low, a low number of strikeouts? Has he hit 2.5 or lower?
Let's see. His lowest is 2.6 is his lowest.
And that was probably like 94, 95, 96?
95.
Okay.
Yeah. 95. His career BABIP, 341. You know, he's always putting the ball in play. Career average, 338. And that man had over 10,000 plate appearances. 10,000 plate appearances. He racked up a batting average of 338.
I think it was 94 where he batted. He just missed 400, but he still hit over 1,000 OPS.
So in 94, he hit 394. His WRC plus was 166. His slugging was 568. His OPS that year was 1,022.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And the funny part is his OPS was over 1,000, and he probably had 15 home runs.
He had 12.
How do you have an OPS of over 1,000 and you hit 12 home runs? Like, that's
117 singles, 35 doubles, and one triple.
That's insane.
It is. It really is.
But Frank Schwindel has been a really nice story, and I don't know. I mean, the guy is an 18th round draft pick. He's a almost 30-year-old rookie. Like, I don't know what, you know, honestly, you can expect from him long term, but this has been a really nice story, and it's something that, you know, true Cubs fans will never forget.
Yeah, I mean, at least this dark time right now, at least we're having a little bit of fun. Like, yes, being at yesterday's game, it was fun. The people that were there were really into it. They were cheering. It wasn't a full house, but the people who were there were having a good time. It was a beautiful day. And seeing Matt Duffy hit a grand slam too, that was something. First ever career multi-homer game, first ever career grand slam.
Yeah, this is such a nice season that, honestly, I would be comfortable buying a Frank Schwindel jersey if he never played another game for the Cubs after this year.
You would be that guy, wouldn't you?
I'll be like, my Frank Schwindel jersey. And then the true Cubs fans will be like, years from now, they'll be like, oh shit, he's wearing a Frank Schwindel jersey. And that'll be that guy.
Yeah, I mean, it's fun looking around at like Wrigley Field to look for those jerseys. I saw someone wearing a Schwindel jersey, actually, no joke.
I saw a website I didn't know existed until they tweeted out before he hit that home run. They were like, if Schwindel hits a home run here, we're giving 18% off everything on our store. And with the code Frank18, and he hits the home run. And I'm like, okay, what do they have on their store? But they had a shirt that just had a tank on it with the number 18 in it. I was like,
yes.
It's like, yes. Do I get that?
It would be fun. Like, you know, just, it's always fun to remember those obscure players. Like, I always laugh when I see, I mean, he's not obscure, obviously. He was a great player, but you know, when Jim Edmonds was a Cub in 08, it is kind of funny seeing a Jim Edmonds jersey every now and then, a Cubs Jim Edmonds jersey around Wrigley Field.
Yeah, you know, it'll be...
Or LaHare. I've seen some Brian LaHares.
Yeah, or if you have a, you know, in the future, if you have a White Sox fan wearing a Yermin Mercedes jersey.
Honestly, like, this, like... The White Sox had their Yermin Mercedes. We have Frank Schwindel and Patrick Wisdom. It's been kind of the year of the obscure guy in this city.
Absolutely. And I'm here for it. I'm here for it when, you know, you go on a seven game, the only seven game winning streak you've had all season wasn't on the back of Chris Bryant. It wasn't on the back of Anthony Rizzo or Javi Baez or Wilson Contreras. It was on the back of Frank Schwindel.
Frank the Tank. Pretty awesome. Like, it's just, at least it's giving something to watch. Like, it gives us a reason. Like, honestly, like, today I was excited to see a bit of the game because I'm like, I want to watch Frank Schwindel. I want to keep seeing what he can do. And he delivers two more hits, including another game winner. What is this, like his third or fourth straight game-winning hit? He hit like a go-ahead home run Friday, and then he had the grand slam Sunday. Or Saturday, he had the walk-off hit. Then he had the grand slam. Then he had today the game-winning RBI single. Isn't that nuts? Like four straight days of game-winning hits.
Yeah, it's like every day you're like, oh, his sixth home run of the season, his seventh home run of the season, his eighth home run of the season.
And the one he hit, I think it was Saturday before the walk-off, he hit one off the video board.
Yeah. Well, is there anything else you wanted to talk about?
No, I think I've said my piece tonight.
Well, that's going to do it for this episode of Bill Swirsky Sports Talk Chicago. I want to thank everybody so much for listening. Please hit subscribe however you listen to podcasts, whether it's iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, TuneIn, Google Play, Spotify, etc. Share this podcast with your friends. It's how we grow the show. Follow us on social media at Swirsky Sports, Facebook.com/Swirsky Sports, SwirskySports.com, AlexPatSportsChat.blogspot.com, and Facebook, AlexPatSportsChat. And thanks so much for listening. And until next time, bear down.
Cubs win. What a lucky break. The good Lord wants the Cubs to win.
We thank Ditka and God for all they have provided.
Cubs win. Cubs win. Cubs win.
Oh, I don't want her, you can have her. She's a Packer fan. She can't fit in my van. And she looks like...
Remember, New Yorkers, smoking crack is not legal on the plains.
Bears, 31 to negative 7.
The Bears!
Oh, when the Bears go bearing...